Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
And so we went digging into the ground and started to burn many things we found, but...
Yeah, we did. We started to burn too many things we found. This is Harvey Wasserman at the Solartopia Green Power and Wellness Show for another hour of scintillating conversation from the past, present, and the future. Today we have Bob Fitrakis. Bob, you with us? Not yet. Okay, so we're going to talk today about stolen elections. And what happens when a country tries to run its elections on electronic voting machines that can be hacked and otherwise messed around with. My co-author, Bob Fitrakis, hopefully will be with us to discuss it. Bob has been to the all three of the major political conventions today this year. At the Green Party Convention, the Republican National Convention, and the Democratic Convention, all three of them. So he will give us a report. I do want to express my profound, I've had some Facebook confrontations, shall we say, with this stuff. My amazement that people still think that election theft is some kind of conspiracy theory. I mean, the fact of the matter is that we have elections that are conducted on voting machines that have absolutely no way of being monitored or verified, or even the source code has been determined by the courts to be proprietary. So as my co-author, Bob Fitrakis, and I, discovered in Ohio in 2004, it is very, very easy to steal an election. And in fact, in this country, we have to live with the reality, and no matter what anyone else says at this point, and if you read a history book that does not include this reality, it is not a legitimate or credible book, that both the 2000 and the 2004 elections were stolen. Al Gore was the rightful winner in 2000 of John Kerry in 2004, but we wound up with George W. Bush, and God help us, the country has never been the same. Bob, you're speaking to us from Columbus, Ohio, is that right?
Correct, I'm here, Harvey.
You on your landline at Columbus State, or are you zipping around town on
yourself?
I'm at
Columbus State on the landline.
All right, excellent. So, Bob, I mentioned to our listeners, you're my co-conspirator on, I can never remember, it's six or seven books and countless articles about the theft of elections in this country. I still get grief on Facebook and other places from, I mean, we still get grief from people who say that we're conspiracy theorists and all this crap. So you are probably the only person in the country, or one of a tiny handful, that went to the Republican National Convention and the Democratic National Convention and the Green Party Convention. So let's start with the Republicans. What happened in Trump land when you were up in Cleveland?
Well, you know, it wasn't quite as exciting. I found the Democratic convention to be far more exhilarating, far more tension. You know, I think Trump scared people off. I think they thought the jackboots were heading into the street there. So, you know, you had one guy up there, you know, carrying like an AK or the equivalent of an assault rifle, and he was mobbed by the national media. But there really wasn't the tension in numbers in the street at the Republican National Convention. Also, a far larger police present, and they looked a lot meaner. the Philly police were on their best behavior. You know, not only did they arrest you, they gave you a bottle of water.
You're kidding.
No.
When you got arrested, you got a bottle of water?
When I was watching primarily the Democratic Spring people, you know, who marched on Monday, you know, when the convention opened up, and I think 54 was the total I saw being arrested. But and they would help them over the barriers, right? So they were very helpful. They'd help you over. They'd kind of cuff you with the plastic cuffs, and they'd give you a bottle of water because it was 103 degrees.
Wow. Well, do we know, did they put anything in the water?
No, that had been the Green Party convention, Harvey.
Yeah. Well, that was redundant. So, all right, so let's finish with the Republicans. Did you march? Were there any marches you participated in?
There was a protest the weekend before, and also there was a huge convention put on by the Peace and Justice Forces. But there really wasn't much to be marched at. I mean, the thing to observe about the Trump people is, you know, I'm not sure you really want to debate them because they're not real big on facts, but you definitely don't want to fight them. Heavily tattooed, disproportionately, you know, white male, disproportionately. Many are very large, not a whole lot of women there, and many of the women that are there look like they were heading out to a heavy metal concert. You know, they were young and with their boyfriends. So I was really sort of, and that's the crowd that's outside supporting Trump. So I was wondering what a bizarre mix it must have been with the remnants of the mainstream born-again Republicans with what looked like, you know, a populist, right-wing, somewhat fascistic movement that was really pissed off and liked to yell at anyone who disagreed with him.
Well, we got to say that Trump is our Mussolini. I don't think he's yet a Hitler. I can't see Trump running.
No. He's got a little of Mussolini's mannerisms with the chin.
Yeah. He doesn't speak Italian, though. That's a problem. So I got to tell you that just for the future, dealing with Trump people, I once spoke at a Tea Party gathering at a bar in Columbus set up by Dave Martin. And the guy before me was just completely ranting and yelling and screaming about climate change and Al Gore is going to rape his daughter and stuff like that. And so I couldn't figure out what to talk to these people about. So I got up, and I was the Greenpeace guy. I was going to be raw meat. And they started talking about pot and marijuana legalization. And there was like 60 blank stares in the room, you know. And they're all for legalizing pot, and a lot of them smoke it. And they just didn't know what to say. So I assume that the next time we're encountered with some of these Trump people, we should probably ask them for a joint. What do you think?
Well, you know, I mean, that's a very good point. Some of the Trump people I saw seemed to be rocking a meth lab kind of vibe. I think the pot and their anti-statist attitudes could take a little edge off that. It'd be good for them.
It's
also, you know, mildly psychoactive and may have them think a little more creatively about what they're doing.
Well, I think that Trump is officially against legalizing pot, but I'm sure that a good percentage of this skinhead tattooed, tattoos got pretty much across the board, fascistic followers that he has, I bet a lot of them are potheads, and probably drink and smoke at the same time, will be my guess. On the basis of that unscientific observation, tell us about the Democratic Party convention.
Well, you can imagine with WikiLeaks, you know, leaking the Democratic National Committee stolen files just prior to that, and those files saying stuff like, Well, what if we said, you know, let people in Kentucky and WV, West Virginia, know that Bernie was not only a socialist but an atheist, and you could see the obvious intervention, the bias, you know, behavior by the Democratic National Committee, which was supposed to be neutral. So you had some real pissed off peaceniks. I spoke on Sunday night at Pepper's Restaurant in just outside Pennsylvania. The people there were primarily people from New York City and California. A lot of them were the California election integrity people. They had lawyers there, Bill Simpich, who sued for the vote count in California. You had a lot of California delegates there. And when I went into my analysis, you could hear people getting agitated. When I said, you know, they were using minivan, they were using the app provided by the DNC to isolate and purge, strip, as we say in our book, the Bernie supporters from the voting roll, they were using the NPP ballots, the no party preference, to make sure that independents eligible to vote in the Democratic primary who had signed up to vote for Bernie could not vote because there'd be no presidential option on that no party preference ballot. You could just see them getting mad, I mean, pissed off. And then, you know, the question becomes, well, what do we do? And I said, you know, you occupy, you demonstrate, you walk out. And, you know, I mean, we've been saying this stuff since the 2000 election, Harvey. No one really takes that action. But these people immediately voted to write up a statement to walk out when Hillary was nominated on Tuesday. And more than that, they actually did walk out. So much to their credit, hundreds upon hundreds, really led by California, which can only be referred to as a coup d'etat, not an election, where the Bernie voters were targeted for systematic election stripping from the voter rolls. So they were upset. And then I did get to address on Monday Cornel West and Sherry Honkola, who ran as a VP, in the 2012 election, were leading a march in 103-degree heat, and it was a five-mile march. I mean, by the end of it, I was confessing to all sorts of stuff. I thought it was like Gitmo-type torture. It was so hot. So
wow.
They go on this long march, and then 2 miles in or so, Sherry Honkola sees me. You know, I'm on the side, you know, taking notes as a good free press reporter. And she hands me, has a security guard hand me the megaphone and says, address him on election fraud. So I gave him a 2-3 minute spiel on the coup in California, how this was deliberate, how the elections, were hacked, how they're able to access, these voter databases and electronic poll books to strip Sanders voters, and people were pissed. And again, I suggested they take a rest. And I'm not saying I'm responsible for this, but 54 of them marched down and immediately went over the barricades and took a rest.
Wow.
And then, then I spoke on Tuesday at the Progressive Democrats of America, which was interesting, primarily the California and New York delegation. But remember, there was a purge in Brooklyn of 126,000, primarily Bernie Sanders' new registered voters. And a daughter of a Clinton superdelegate, you know, ended up buying property from a clerk who did the purging for $1.5 million over the listed price for a property that was no longer on the market and hadn't sold, right? So it looks like an old-fashioned Tammany Hall bribe. But when I outlined how easy it is to strip the voter rolls because of these private partisan for-profit companies with the proprietary secret software that you talked about at the beginning of the show that needs to be banned from American politics, they were very upset. But two people, and they said they voted to walk out as well with the California delegates and other Bernie delegates. And two people said, you know, there's a room of 100 people. Two said, well, maybe that's not a good idea. And I thought I was going to see peaceniks in a fist fight. People began to cuss each other out, right? These are, you know, nonviolent communication people. They're anti-war people. They're literally peaceful, gentle people until it came to the issue of walking out. And those that said, let's not walk out, let's think about this, perhaps we should get behind Hillary, were immediately cussed out by most of the room.
So I assume this is a pretty young crowd that was marching there. Is that right?
Yeah, the people marching were overwhelmingly young, but and Jill Stein showed up at the start of the rally. I think that was a bit prearranged, and they were very excited. They were chanting like, hell no, DNC, we won't vote for Hillary. And Jill,
that's good.
Not Hill. So there was this tremendous, among these burners, among this Bernie or bus crowd, tremendous energy and contempt for Hillary Clinton, for the DNC, for perhaps one of your relatives, Debbie Wasserman Schultz.
All right, now I want to make something very clear here. I have I've formally sent her a note asking her to stop using the middle name. We are not related, so there you go. I mean, what can I tell you? And I was glad when she was removed. That must have been a pretty amazing moment when people heard that she had been removed. Was there a group reaction to that?
Yeah, but it turned to sort of a negative reaction when they heard soon after she'd been hired by the Clinton campaign. The general approach is, well, she'd been working for it all along. You know, maybe she should be paying taxes, you know, on the bribes or income she must have got for rigging the election against Sanders.
Right. Now, it is our conclusion, and we haven't written this up yet, but you've done the basic research, that Bernie was probably the rightful winner of the primaries, the Democratic primaries. And, of course, I get a lot of conspiracy theory replies to this from people who know absolutely nothing about the process and did no research. So, Bob, will you lay out for our listeners why you believe that Bernie was, in fact, the rightful winner of the Democratic Party nomination for president?
Well, I think people should read the Election Justice Report, the 96-page report. All they got to do is Google it. The past president of the American Statistical Association has signed off on that. It's leading academics and scholars, right? It's not activists that wrote it. It's primarily, you know, it's math and statistical geeks, and they point out that had the election not been so distorted in 12 states with impossible results, if you assume what the exit poll said as opposed to, you know, adjusting it by 36 points, which is madness and folly and corruption and the whole state of, you know, Arizona and Alabama need to have yellow police tape around around them, and particularly their voting centers, is that had those unbelievable, implausible, statistically impossible results not been accepted, Bernie would have clearly had enough delegates to win the election. And had not the AP and the Medium Consortium pool, which is the four network news, Fox, ABC, NBC, CBS, and AP and CNN, but particularly had not AP lost the ability to do simple math, and on the, you know, just prior to the California vote, remember what they did? They recounted and said, oh, no big deal, Hillary's already won. So the major media in this country was collaborating with the DNC, with Hillary Clinton, to make sure that a democratic socialist, a populist in the tradition of Debs, would not receive the nomination he rightfully won. That's what the numbers say. I think Richard Charnin, who gets criticized all the time, but he gets criticized for people who couldn't tell you what the sum of the sum of the square over the sum of the square was, couldn't tell you how to come up with an N or come up with a measure of central tendency. All he does is math with two master's degrees and had worked on Wall Street and made money before he dedicated his retirement years to clean elections. None of them are capable of doing math. Where's Joshua Holland at the Nation? Where is his mathematical proofs? There's no evidence whatsoever, you know, and I'll even let him use an abacus, Harvey. I'll even let him take off his shoes, you know, to have a few extra digits. Same thing with Brad Blog. The people attacking Charnin tend not to do any math, and the people that really do math, and that's the election justice people, have a absolutely cautious report that shows that had there not been 12 states showing fraudulent elections, statistically significant outside the margin of error, is that if we assume the exit polls are correct and within the margin of error, Bernie would have won. But what do? They assume that the numbers, no matter how bad, no matter how many machines hop, no matter how many board of elections flip their totals, they assume that the implausible numbers that would be condemned by the United States State Department, condemned by the Agency on International Development at the State Department, and held to be fraudulent, which gave Hillary the nomination, that those fraudulent results are in fact okay.
So the biggest statement I get is that allegedly Hillary won by 3 million votes. Are we saying that they were able to flip 3 million votes?
Oh, well, yeah. Well, if you take the combination of strip and flip, of course they were. They you know, look at Ohio. I mean, Hillary should have won by 4-5 points in Ohio. Instead, they got her winning by 14. So even in states where they won, they have these massively inflated numbers that that are part of that 3 million votes. You know, it appears Bernie won Massachusetts, Illinois, Missouri. In fact, there's another report from a couple graduate students, one from Stanford, that shows that the more insecure a machine is, that is, the easier it is to hack, the easier it is for the ES&S people, private company, without oversight, to go in and secretly code these machines, the better Hillary Clinton did. In caucuses where they used pencil and paper, Bernie did overwhelmingly good. The more secure a machine, Bernie did better. But, you know, Hart Intercivic, 12 areas of computer security, it flunks all 12. Hillary is kicking ass on those types of machine, Harvey. The more insecure it is, the more there's private access to it, the better Hillary Clinton did. The more non-verifiable a machine, and also the more the numbers are implausible.
Well, okay, we'll take that, and we'll write that up, and we'll have an article out in a bit, which will add to the our book, The Strip and Flip Selection of 2016. I'm talking with Bob Patrakis, my co-conspirator on six or seven books, lost count on election theft, election integrity, what happened to the U.S. in 2000 and 2004, and what could happen in 2016. You know, these Democrats are also cocky now, and sure, they're going to beat Donald Trump. You know, it's August. We got 3 months till November, and or 2.5 at any rate. And there's nothing to stop the Republicans from stealing this election. He's not that far ahead.
No, in the three key battleground states, Pennsylvania, Florida, and Ohio, he's actually running quite close.
Yeah, I mean, she's not that far ahead, and if they're close now, you know, I don't think Trump is going to drop in the polls. Maybe a little bit. I don't know what else he could do unless he just actually shot somebody. But
hit rock bottom. He's got a 70% unfavorable rating, but that 30% is rabid, and they're coming out to vote.
Yeah, they are. And, you know, I don't know. The question really is, boils down to, as far as I'm concerned, whether John Kasich and John Houston are going to be willing to flip the vote in Ohio. That's the governor and the secretary of state for Donald Trump. I mean, clearly they want Rob Portman to win the Senate seat. So on election night, somewhere between now and election night, Donald Trump is going to make an offer to John Kasich of some kind. Some deal. And Kasich does have the power, as you and I know, with John Houston, to make the Ohio vote count come out the however the hell they want it to come out. And the question is, and they're certainly going to flip it for Portman if he needs it. He could win anyway, possibly. But will they flip it for Donald Trump?
Well, that's the question will be the down tickets. You write the U.S. Senate race. And the House races. But I want to give the name of the report, the Election Justice Report, to the people. Again, it ended up being 99 pages long. But one of the things, they estimate that Sanders lost 184 delegates, which would have been enough to give him the nomination if he would have had 184. And here are the things that they looked at. And their report is called Democracy Lost, a report on the fatally flawed 2016 Democratic primaries. Here's some of the things they discovered, right? And these are academics. Some voters alleged their signatures were tampered with. Some people found that their signatures, somebody else had voted for them. Election Justice also suspected computer hacking. Clearly the reduced polling stations in Arizona, the Phoenix area, worked to Hillary's advantage. The targeting of the no-party preference voters, giving them the wrong ballot instead of an independent ballot to vote in the primary for a Democrat. They gave them these NPP ballots. The obvious potential voter registration tampering, where many of the Bernie people in California were put in the American Independence Party instead of an independent that could vote in the Democratic primary. What they saw, potential massive voter registration tampering, somebody was tampering and stripping the votes, the massive purges of voters that reflected Bernie demographics, young college students. Also, many of them were forced to vote provisionally, and their votes weren't counted. The exit poll data indicates problems with the machine tallies in 12 states. Also, there looks like there's an algorithm where the larger the precinct was, the more likely Hillary was to get votes. It's following this natural line, and suddenly once you get a precinct of over 500, Hillary gets an unexplained vote that is at odds with the actual exit polls. Chicago clearly got caught fixing the audit after the election to cover up the problem with the vote. How hackable the voting machines are, and, of course, the direct intervention by the DNC to make sure that Bernie would not win, right? They were using minivan. They had their own app, and it looks like the Bernie campaign that was supposed to be shared with the DNC, and they used the this app from the DNC to record all their data, and that was used to target and purge Sanders voters. So people should look at Democracy Lost, the report by the Election Justice Group.
Now, you have filed a lawsuit. Do you want to tell us about the lawsuit?
Yeah, I sued Edison Research Group, arguing they're engaged in essentially illegal collaboration with the media consortium and with the Secretary of State in certain states by not releasing their raw data and assuming that the official numbers from the eminently hackable computer machines that are maintained by private partisan for-profit companies with their secret software, by assuming that they're in collaboration to deny free speech and voting rights to people that aren't part of that cabal, which is the five members of the media consortium and the Edison Research Group. So, again, what they need to do is release their raw data so we can see what the actual numbers are, instead of coming up with statistically impossible adjustments that could only happen. Those 12 numbers stacked on top of each other in state after state, statistically outside the margin of error, would only happen once in every 78 billion elections. We're not defying the impossible. And remember, those elections only occur every 4 years, Harvey. So times 78 billion. Giving us numbers that are fraudulent.
How is the suit going along here?
Well, the other side hired Baker Hotstetler, the global law firm. They brag being a global law firm with more than $600 million in revenue. I did make $3,000 last year, Harvey, so I think it's going to be a fair fight.
Yeah, well, you're smarter than they are. What other lawsuits have been filed as a result of the primaries, and what is happening in California? I know that vote count is still up in the air.
Well, Ray Lutz won his lawsuit against Michael Vu. Right, we're aware of Michael Vu from 2004. He's the one that forced people to vote provisionally and then didn't count 41% of it. He's the one where two of his workers were convicted for rigging the recount. He's the man that caused mass confusion. Michael Vu was the head of the Board of Elections in Cuyahoga County, where Cleveland is. He's the individual that allowed a quarter of all the voters in Cleveland to be stripped from the voting roll. The more African Americans in a precinct, the higher the purges were, up to 51% of the voters in some African American precincts. So Michael Vu was sued. He moved after 2007 out to sunny San Diego, where he now runs registration, the registrar for San Diego, and he's doing the exact same thing. A judge just ruled against him, demanded that he count all the votes, and once all the votes are counted, then they do an audit, right? They wanted to project the winner with 1.4 million votes uncounted, right? That overwhelmingly Bernie supporters, so they could create false momentum from Hillary Clinton as she went into the Democratic convention. Also, you may recall, Edison Research Group called off the exit polls in all remaining primaries, and on the eve of the California primary, refused to do an exit poll after they got notice that they should hold on to all their records because a lawsuit was coming. That was their response, no exit polls.
So who do we think actually won the California primary?
Well, I don't think there's any doubt. I think when all the votes are counted, Bernie Sanders will win. That's with all the votes counted. But remember, he lost tens of thousands of voters from the purging, from people showing up, and they were unable to vote because they'd been put in the Libertarian Party, the American Independence Party. They had a no-party preference ballot. Remember, in California, if you're an independent, you can choose to vote in the Democratic primary for Bernie Sanders. They stripped and purged those voters, and they refused to allow many of them to vote, tens of thousands. They sent, and you'll recall this tactic, they sent absentee mailed the ballots to them, and then when they showed up to vote, they said, well, you didn't bring your ballot in to surrender, so you can't vote. It was the same stuff that was used in Florida in 2000, and particularly in Ohio in 2004.
So, but the Democrats ran their primary, right? Each party runs their own primary.
Correct, but in this case, it was counted by the Secretary of State, who I've argued was collaborating with the consortium and the Democratic Party regulars, the regular apparatus. I don't know who was doing it. I don't know whether it was ES&S, who you've pointed out, we pointed out at one point, Warren Buffett, who supports Hillary Clinton, was a part owner through the Omaha World Herald, just like Hardiner Civic was bought up by Bain Company, former Bain Company officials who were friends of Mitt Romney, as well as Solomare, one of his family's hedge fund, had actually invested in the third largest voting machine. That came out in 2012. Forbes magazine, if you Google Forbes and Fitrakis, has an article that came out in the wee hours of the morning on Election Day 2012 saying that the technical foundations of our elections are shaky and in peril. You know, the Daily Business News, etc., Wired Magazine, Computer World, a lot of these have came out in support of our investigation and works by Bev Harris and others that shows how hackable and easily stealable the votes are in a system that lacks all transparency.
So I actually got a call this morning from the BBC. They heard that Donald Trump has said that the election is rigged because hundreds of thousands of people are going to vote multiple times. I had to explain to them that people don't vote multiple times. It's a five-year felony. You could never get enough people together to vote multiple times that would have an effect on the election, especially why would you bother when a few keystrokes, you can flip millions of votes. I do want to ask Bob about the DNC. Did you get into the DNC? Were you on the floor at all?
No, but they were paying people to fill the seats. At one point, it looked like, you know, after hundreds of Bernie delegates had walked out, they had all these empty seats. People were tweeting me. I was on the outside, and they were tweeting me what was going on. They were using these white noise machines by New York and Oregon and certain delegations to muffle the heckling of Hillary Clinton. They actually turned down the lights. On the last night, people had day glow safety vests on that were yellow and orange, and when the lights went down, they glowed green, indicating they were going to vote for Jill Stein, the Jill not Hill, at the convention. Also, it was widely reported that they were paying people and giving out credentials so some of their friends in Hollywood and elsewhere could fill the seats of delegates, because so many people had walked out on Tuesday and again on Thursday.
So I did have the opportunity. I spoke at a gathering in Santa Monica of about six or seven young people who had been Bernie delegates and said they were treated really badly.
Oh, yeah, now they were confiscating their signs. And recall a former state senator from Ohio and Bernie surrogate Nina Turner was supposed to make a seconding speech, but because she refused in the speech to say that she was going to endorse Hillary, they pulled her credentials.
And wow, they kicked her out of
the convention?
Was
supposed to give a seconding speech for Bernie for president. They were grabbing people's sign, and also, and I saw this in 92 when the Clintons first showed up, they had all, they had people, they paid people and got volunteers to handwrite signs for Hillary to make it seem like there was a groundswell for Hillary. And then they confiscated virtually all of the Bernie signs. Another thing that was widely reported, people were tweeting to me, sending me messages, was that anyone with a TPP sign, the signs were confiscated, and they tried to shut them down when they chanted no PPP. The odd part here is Bernie forced Hillary to accept that position, but the DNC, ever free trade, ever neoliberal, ever pro-global corporate capitalism, was confiscating the signs, threatening to pull people's credentials at the convention.
That's amazing. That's really amazing. Well, at this gathering in Santa Monica, there were six or seven young people who told stories like that, and I did have the grand opportunity to ask the audience if anybody, in addition to me, had been to the Democrat convention in 1968, and nobody, but one guy raised his hand. Another geezer was there, and he said he actually, it was the only time in his life he actually punched a cop. Was there any violence in the streets? Were the people assaulted by the Philadelphia police, or anybody assaulted inside the hall?
No, it was the city of brotherly love. The police, I mean, essentially, they were giving out $50 tickets. Now, something very strange happened after the fact, is the federal government has moved in and tried to charge some people with federal crimes that have significant penalties under Homeland Security and other factors. So Philly was letting you, you know, cuffing you, giving you water, you know, maybe even giving you a hug if you weren't too sweaty, and letting you and kicking you. But the federal government under Obama has been raising some questions of possible Homeland Security and talking about federal charges. So some people there are being held on more extensive federal charges.
You mean there's people who are charged retroactively for federal crimes?
Well, yeah, after the fact that federal observers, you know, many of them in plain clothes, I think it's a way to decapitate movements, right, is to go after some of the leaders of it.
Wow. So do we still have people in prison from Philadelphia, from these demonstrations?
I'm not sure, but it's worth worth noting. Let me see if I can pull it up. It was all over the Internet, and people were very upset about it, and it came up at the Green Party convention.
Well, let's talk about the Green Party convention, but if you look that up, we need to write about that and let the public know that people are being prosecuted for federal crimes at this convention. I mean, you know, there was obviously plenty of demonstrating, but there didn't appear to be any violence that we saw from Philadelphia. So if this is happening, we need to know, and certainly the names of the people who are being persecuted, and I use that term advisedly, by the feds, they need to, their names need to be known, and they need
but
to be
supported. It looks like
supported.
2 days ago, they dropped the charges against 3 women and 1 male for jumping a fence at the DNC. The feds were claiming that actually violated a federal law. But it looks like so much pressure was brought to bear, they dropped the charges 2 days ago.
All right, well, that's good to know. All right, so let's keep our eyes on that. Okay, so from Philadelphia, Bob, you went to Houston to the Green Party convention. You have a position in this Green Shadow Cabinet. What is your position? I can't remember.
I'm the Federal Elections Commissioner.
Well, mazel tov. I'm the Secretary of Energy. I'm still waiting for my salary check, but how many folks were at the Green Party convention? It was at the University of Houston, right?
Yeah, it was at the University of Houston, and there's nothing finer than Texas in August.
Right. Was anybody wearing any clothing? I mean, was this a clothing optional gathering?
Well, you know, I'm not sure there was a lot of heavy undergarments being worn.
Yeah,
it was a hippie, neo-hippie festival. It's like that pagan festival you've been known to go to and speak at,
right.
Harvey.
Starwood. So tell us about it. Tell us about the Green Party convention, how many people were there. Was Jill nominated by acclamation, Jill Stein?
Actually, she got 84% of the vote. There was a little tension in the party between a few black nationalists, including a presidential candidate who wants to see the party more as a vehicle of with people of color and that type of leadership. So she got 84% of the vote. And there was about, I believe, a total count was 201 delegates.
So she will be on the ballot.
But there was really about another 300 Bernie observers. That seemed to be the largest amount of people there were these Bernie or bust people, these burners that kept yelling, you know, Jill, not Hill.
And what exactly? You guys drew up a platform, I assume.
Yeah, the platform comes out against any private ownership of proprietary software in the elections. It demands any code that's being used be open source. Also, there was an amendment submitted that really makes the party an eco-socialist party. Also, I don't know where she gets this idea, but Jill claims by 2030 we can be totally alternative clean energy, no fossil fuel. So look into that if you can and see where those ideas came from.
Okay, I'll see if my Solartopia book, I don't remember exactly. If I remember, you know, Solartopia, if you remember being there, you weren't. So a lot of tie-dye at this convention, I assume?
Well, not so much among the burners who were observing, but clearly among, you know, the Jill people.
And how many state ballots will the Green Party presidential candidate be on?
Last time I heard, they were anticipating possibly 45. But they're going to try to get on all 50, and there's some lawsuits in the works, and there's actually some money. Jill announced at a press conference, in the last 3 weeks, she's raised more money than in the previous year and a half. And a lot of it is small money, like $27, coming in from the Bernie Sanders supporters, from the Berners.
Yeah, well, I had suggested, I know this didn't go anywhere, but, you know, Bernie, there's a whole dynamic of whether Bernie would become the Green Party nominee. And I did suggest that if that happened, that Jill become a Lutheran because, you know, two Jewish candidates would never cut it. But she is campaigning really hard. Is she touring full time now? And also tell us about the person that she nominated. She took for vice president, because I don't know much about that person.
Jammu Baraka. He also is a member of the Green Shadow Cabinet. He's an associate fellow at the Institute for Policy Studies, you know, the IPS. He's an editor and contributing columnist for the Black Agenda Report that does great reporting. You know, I've seen him on CNN, BBC, Tavis Smiley's show. So he's essentially a human rights attorney. He's associated with the Black Lives Matter movement. He's founding executive director of the U.S. Human Rights Network since 2011, and that includes groups like Amnesty International. So really very strong human rights agenda.
And I assume that the Black Lives Matter presence was substantial at this convention.
Well, it was noticeable, but I think the nomination of Jammu Baraka will bring that movement into the Green Party. And again, you had Cornel West there, who gave an incredibly fiery speech, right, as a perhaps the leading surrogate for Bernie Sanders and a member of Sanders, the platform committee, on behalf of Sanders at the Democratic National Convention. He was the visible sign to the Berners to come over into the Green Party.
Now, Jill is she's actually statistically significant now in the national polls, but a lot of the media is focusing on Gary Johnson, who's a former governor of New Mexico, who is a major pot smoker. Apparently, he smokes every day, but he says if he's elected president, he will not smoke while he's in the White House. I think that's a mistake.
Yeah,
but,
me too. The low THC stuff.
Yeah, all right. A pot light, I guess, will be the deal. So where can people look at the Green Party platform?
Oh, all you got to do is put in Green Party platform. You know, as we speak, I'm doing it. Out there in numerous forms, including a very nice PDF that pops up. Again, I could probably pull it up right here as we speak, the Green Party platform.
People should go look at that Green Party platform. You need to post, if you would, the link to the Death of Democracy report on the Democratic primaries. What was the title of it again?
Give you the title: Democracy Lost, a report on the fatally flawed 2016 Democratic primary. Lost, a 96-page report by Election Justice.
Okay, so
and again,
Bob,
these people are statistically very gifted. Again, and it also was approved by the former head of the American Statistical Association.
So, Bob Petrakis, you are publisher of FreePress.org, which is in print and, of course, online, professor of political science at Columbus State Community College. How do people get in touch with you?
Well, the best thing is to go to FreePress.org, and my email, and these Bernie people are blowing it up after I talked at the Democratic National Convention. I mean, man, I've never seen a larger social media network, but is robertfetrakis@gmail.com. So, and check out my site, freepress.org.
Yeah, freepress.org. Our book is there, The Strip and Flip Selection of 2016. We will be co-authoring a piece in the near future on the theft of the Democratic nomination in 2016 to go along with the theft of the presidency in 2000 and 2004. Any last words, Bob, in the remaining few seconds?
Well, I think people should check out the alternative candidates and make up their own mind. Clearly, Hillary Clinton stands for, you know, she's a hawk. She brought us Libya. She brought us Syria. She brought us ISIS. And with the help of George Bush. And she, I don't really think that... the things that went on with the Clinton Foundation were anything more than pay to play on a global scale. How you shake down the Saudis for money so you can so they can buy weapons and export them around the globe. So
and Bob Petrakis, it's great to have you on. We'll spread this around on the internet. We'll do our piece. This has been the Solartopia Green Power Wellness Show, honored by the presence of my great co-conspirator, Bob Petrakis, who did the trifecta this year, the RNC, the DNC, and the only one that counts in the long run, the Green Party Convention. Thanks to the guys in New York. Thank you, listeners. Go to prn.fm, and Bob will post this link on the internet. We'll see you next week at the Solartopia Green Power and Wellness Show.
Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.